Then we have this argument about Epikaya. They say that Epikaya saves the day by taking God's laws away. The militant saints are indeed in a tight spot. It seems we are toward the end of the world, much the same as the game was in the second half of the ninth inning. Most of those who once held an office, authority, or jurisdiction in the church have now lost it. Therefore, Epikaya tells the traditionalist movement members that the legislatures and those who made the laws of the church no longer want them to be binding. I will now state the following beliefs of the traditionalist movement. Quote, those who made the laws did not realize what a bad situation we would be in toward the end of the world. You do not eliminate the laws and rules of baseball because it is the bottom half of the ninth inning. Nevertheless, at this critical time in church history, Epikaya has to save our day and eliminate some of the laws and rules of the church, especially the necessity of the papal mandate, unquote, of the beliefs of the traditionalist movement. The militant saints are in need of a run to win the game. That is to say, they need the grace of final perseverance and the need to die in the state of sanctifying grace. All the militant saints have Raphael the Archangel to guide them. That is, everyone has a good guardian angel who gives them only good counsel and directions on keeping God's commandments. We also have Mario Humbeline, who I will compare to the mediatrix of all graces, telling us what to do. We know, so to speak, Mario Humbeline warned George Dragon not to do what he did. The documents of Vatican II were well discussed before anyone voted on them. George Dragon, that is, Archbishop Thuc, was very well educated, having doctorates in theology, canon law, and philosophy. The followers of Archbishop Lefebvre remind us that he was also well educated. Therefore, with all their education and knowledge of Catholic doctrine, these men should have immediately recognized the cunning tricks of Vatican II. The Catholic faith told them this council promulgated many heresies, including the most insidious of all, that non-Catholic churches are a means of salvation. The third base umpire, Almighty Know-It-All, indeed made a just judgment when he declared George Dragon was out. We know that Almighty Know-It-All made his decision based upon the official laws and rules of baseball, which were made valid by proper authority. It follows logically that Almighty God, who knows it all, bases his decision on justice, for God judges just judgments. It just so happens that Almighty God approved the laws of his church and the commandments that he said all men, women, and children must observe. Please answer question 199. Do you agree that it is just as foolish and heretical to say that the laws of God's church do not apply in these times as it is to say the official laws and rules of baseball do not apply because it is the last half of the ninth inning? Even though we are in these times, the laws and rules of God and of His church still apply, and the only way to remain faithful to God and to the Catholic Church is to follow these laws and rules. Almighty God, who most certainly knows all things, positively knew what would happen after the death of Pope Pius XII and what would happen for all ages. Although he knew what would happen, God still did not change these laws and say that they do not apply. So, why should anyone else say that the laws of God's church do not apply in these times? God, you might say, is going to stick by these rules that he and his church laid down. God is going to stay with those who observe his laws and commandments and follow the rules of his church, because he approved them. They have his sanction. They have his authority. It follows then that we are not going to save our souls. We are not going to save the souls of others. We're not going to save the church by disobeying the laws of God or of his church. The only thing that follows when people say the laws of God and of his church do not apply in these times, and that they are only a norm for our guidance, is chaos, confusion, and illicit and invalid sacraments. You probably know of the others who played on the team for the militant saints, since you have heard of good Pope John. You know that the Jews are known for loving gold and money, and the conciliar pope who came after John, Johnny Goodman, was a Jew named Moses Goldlover. You also know Double Trouble Jr., the second conciliar pope who had a double name, who caused the double trouble. Of course, you know that all of these played together on the team with the rebel traditions of George Dragon. Rebel traditions is SSPX leader and the man who says he fought for tradition. He hypocritically rebelled against the very establishment of which he always remained a member, although he truthfully called it a non-Catholic religion. They were all at one time part of the militant saints, but since then, all true Catholics should know that these men and their followers have been put out of the Catholic Church and have left the militant saints. These former militant saints left the Catholic Church and continue to switch from one group to another as easily and routinely as players are traded in the major leagues. At one time they play in one team, and a short time later they're members of their former opponent's team. So those who once played on the team in the militant saints may very well have gone to join the dangerous devils. Public television certainly shows the conciliar popes playing with the dangerous devils. The world can see them worshiping in the Jewish synagogues and the Muslim mosques. They are seen at Assisi worshiping with Satanists and the leaders of all kinds of religions. These conciliar popes are absolutely playing games on the same team with the dangerous devils. Nevertheless, these are the very ones that the Society of St. Pius X also accepts as their popes. Many others used to be down there in the ballpark playing games with the dangerous devils. They realized that all these team members are controlled by Superior Satan. They left those dugouts and that playing field and went up into the grandstands. They still see their friends and relatives down there playing with the dangerous devils. They look down at the playing field and see nothing much but chaos, confusion, fighting, disagreement, and disunity. The more they observe what goes on in the traditionalist movement, the more they know it is not of God. That which is of God reflects his attributes of goodness, truth, and beauty. If one looks at what is happening in the world and in what is usually known by the world as the church today, we see the opposite of God's attributes. Instead of goodness, one sees evil, sin, and immorality. Instead of truth, one sees lies, falsehood, and deception. Instead of beauty, one sees things that are ugly, repulsive, and disgusting. Those who left the dangerous devils and all those playing games with them look for someone who remained always faithful to the militant saints. Not finding the true militant saints in the Novus Ordo sect or the traditionalist movement sect, they decided to go home. And Reverend Anthony Shikata calls him, quote, home aloners, unquote, so be it. By the grace of God, they are no longer going to play games with the dangerous devils because they realize the salvation of their souls is at stake. Reverend Anthony Shakata and some other members of the traditionalist movement are good at doing research. Let us see if they will come forth and answer all the questions in this letter. It will be good if they explain clearly how Archbishop Thuk always remained a member of the Catholic Church, although he did the same thing as the other bishops who became members of non-Catholic Novus Ordo religion. Let them prove how the various groups of the traditionalist movement with their conflicting beliefs can have the first mark of the Church, which is unity. Let us see if they all have unity and give the same answers to the questions I am asking in this letter. It might be that the only unity in this matter will be that none of them will come forth and answer any of the questions or encourage the members of their parish to do the same. Let them prove how they have apostolicity, the fourth mark of the Church, without any of them having jurisdiction. I repeat again, where jurisdiction is lacking, there is no real apostolicity. Remember, the Catholic Encyclopedia told us that jurisdiction is essential to the apostolicity of mission. My dear friends, we are not just playing a game. It is an extremely serious matter that we are on the correct side and doing the right thing. We had better not be playing games in any way with the dangerous devils. Are you positive that you are playing on God's team and following all of His rules and commandments? As a review and conclusion, let us again consider carefully, deliberate upon, and ponder over this section of the book, The Pillar and Ground of the Truth, by Father Thomas Cox, Imprimatur and Copyright, 1900, page 173. Quote, "Those who invent doctrines unheard of before are not the successors of the apostles. Novelty and error are children of the same Father, the Father of lies. Those who have lost the line of valid ministers leading back to apostolic times cannot plead the possession of apostolicity. Where there is no ordination, no priesthood, no authority, no power, apostolicity is out of the question. Even if valid orders exist, where jurisdiction is lacking, there is no real apostolicity. Schism as well as heresy destroys apostolic succession." Unquote, from the Pillar and Ground of the Truth. Please answer question 200. Do you agree with me that it is a new doctrine, unheard of before in the history of the Church, that Epikaios somehow does confer on the traditionalist movement bishops the capacity to commit the act of consecrating another bishop? This is serious, because if you admit the truth, you know that this teaching of the traditionalist movement is a new doctrine. Remember that those who invent doctrines unheard of before are not the successors of the apostles, and even if valid orders exist, where jurisdiction is lacking, there is no real apostolicity. Remember the quote of Reverend W. de Vivier, quote, "A Christian society whose bishops go back to the apostles only through the power of order and not also through the power of jurisdiction cannot claim to be apostolic and consequently cannot be the Church of Christ," unquote. Review the truth we found in the Catholic Encyclopedia, Volume 1, on page 649. Quote, "Apostolicity is not found in any other church. It is a necessary consequence of the unity of the Church, for jurisdiction is essential to the apostolicity of mission." Unquote. Father Thomas H. Moore reminded us that any church in which all its clerics lack jurisdiction does not have the right to rule its members, and then he concluded, quote, I am now in a position to identify the Church of Christ by its form of government. Any church which disclaims for itself the right to rule its members sets itself down as not being the Church of Christ. I will not be obliged to investigate it any further. Unquote. Jesus Christ founded the church that at all times is one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. However, where jurisdiction is lacking, there is no real apostolicity. The Catholic Church must never be exactly the same as it was in the days of the apostles, as we read in the encyclical Mortalium Animos. The traditionalist movement clerics truthfully teach they do not have authority, mission, or jurisdiction. Therefore, they do not carry on apostolicity. Please answer question 201. Do you believe every logical, reasoning, and consistent thinking Catholic will have the same conclusion? I cannot prove to myself or others that the Novus Ordo sect or the Traditionist movement sects have all four marks of the Catholic Church. Please answer question 202. Do you agree that they do not have all four marks of the Catholic Church? If you answer no, please explain how it can be true since they do not have authority, jurisdiction, and mission from the legitimate Pope. Listen to the teachings of God's infallible Church. Without authority, there is no apostolicity. Without jurisdiction, there is no apostolicity. Without apostolicity, they are outside of the one universal church of the faithful. Pope Innocent III, Fourth Lateran Council, 1215, teaches ex cathedra, quote, there is but one universal church of the faithful, outside of which no one at all can be saved, unquote. Pope Boniface VIII in the Bull Unum Sanctum 1302 teaches ex cathedra, quote, urged by faith, we are obliged to believe and to maintain that the Church is one, holy, Catholic, and also apostolic. We believe in her firmly, and we confess with simplicity that outside of her there is neither salvation nor the remission of sins. Let us now read from a parochial course of doctrinal instructions based on the teachings of the Catechism of the Council of Trent, prepared and arranged by Very Reverend Charles J. Collin and Very Reverend John A. McHugh, in Premater 1941, Moral Series, Part 3, page 73, and what follows. Quote, the meaning of conscience. 1. There are two rules or norms according to which a person must shape his conduct, namely, the commandments of God and his own conscience. 2. Conscience is the judgment of the practical reason which decides that a particular action is in conformity with or opposition to God's law. 3. We are never permitted to act contrary to the dictates of our conscience. For as St. Paul says, all that is not of faith, that is, according to one's conscience, is sinful. Romans chapter 14, verse 23. If we eat certain food thinking it is forbidden, when it is not forbidden, we sin, says the Apostle. 4. But while one must always act according to the dictates of his conscience, it does not follow that in doing so he may not, under certain conditions, be guilty of sin, for there is such a thing as a false conscience. various kinds of conscience. 1. Conscience may be true, erroneous, or doubtful. It is true when it is in conformity with God's law. It is doubtful when it hesitates or is unable to decide whether a certain action is right or wrong. It is erroneous when it is out of harmony with the divine law. 2. It is never lawful to act with a doubtful conscience, because that would be carelessly running the risk of doing the wrong thing and so of sinning.